Okay, good morning, everyone. Hopefully you're well. I apologize for being a little late today. Again, the only announcement is our share, as always, is sponsored for the entire year by Reverend Fall and Sharon Alman in memory of their parents, Yona Ben Sadok and Esther Bas Rafael, and their son, Harav Shmuel Eliyahu Zichrono Livracha Ben Reverend Fall. Again, we're very, very grateful for their generous support. May it be an Ilui Neshama for their parents and for their son. We more or less, I think, finished our subject, a very interesting subject of men and women being motzi each other in Kiddush and Havdalah. So as I'm contemplating what our next subject will be, so I thought I would talk a little bit about Tu Bishvat. But, as I always say, this is not an inspirational shir. Those who seek inspiration shall go elsewhere. This is a halachic shir. So I'm going to talk about the non-romantic aspects of Tu Bishvat. The romantic aspects of Tu Bishvat, I'm actually going to conduct a Tu Bishvat Seder for Yibaneh Wednesday night, but you are stuck with the technical non-romantic aspects of Tu Bishvat, which are, in fact, very, very interesting, although they're very intricate at the same time. The idea that Tu Bishvat is a Rosh Hashanah li'ilanot, a Rosh Hashanah for trees, is actually mentioned in the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that talks about 4 days of the year are actually called Rosh Hashanahs, 4 days of the year. The first is Rosh Chodesh Nisan is called a Rosh Hashanah. I'll talk about with respect to which purpose. Second, Rosh Chodesh Elul is called a Rosh Hashanah. Third, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, which we call Rosh Hashanah, is called the Rosh Hashanah. And the fourth is actually a Machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says Rosh Chodesh Shavat is a Rosh Hashanah, which of course makes it consistent with the other three that are always the first day of the month. Beis Hillel says that the Rosh Hashanah of Shavat is the 15th of Shavat. And again, that makes it very unusual. It is the only Rosh Hashanah that's in the middle of the month, and as you would expect, as is generally the case, when there's a machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we follow the view of Beis Hillel, and therefore we treat the 15th of Shvat as Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. Now, in terms of halach, I'll talk about what each Rosh Hashanah represents, so just so you'll get a general picture. In terms of halacha, the only halacha of Tu Bishvat, other than Trumas and Maestros that I'll talk about, is from the Gaonim. The Gaonim mention that since all the four Rosh Hashanahs are mentioned together, so they have a quasi-chag status. Of course, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is, of course, a chag. And therefore, the halacha is you don't say tachanun, right? So that much we know for sure, that Tu Bishvat, we don't say tachanun. Since this year, Tu Bishvat is Thursday, so those who like to avoid tachanun, not that we should like to avoid it, get the extra bonus that they get exempt from the long tachanun of Thursday. Okay, be it as it may. Now, what is the significance of a day being called a Rosh Hashanah? Four Rosh Hashanahs. So the Mishnah gives a different purpose for each one of the four. For Nisan, it is called the Rosh Hashanah for kings, for monarchies. What does that mean? That means a Jewish king, even if he became a king, the 29th of Adar, he finishes his year, Nisan, and after Rosh Chodesh Nisan, he is now year two, even though he's only been king for 2 days. And from henceforward, every Nisan, we add another year to his Malchus. Right? So kings typically were said, you're in your third year, your fourth year, your 20th year. So the year is not measured by when you became a king. The year is measured by Nisan. So year one could be very, very short. Year one could literally be just a day. Yom Echad Bashana Chashuv Shana. And here the Gemara goes into very intricate calculations from many psukim in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah regarding when there's a change of reign. And the Gemara comes up with a very interesting chiluk that in biblical chronology, the years of Jewish kings change in Nisan, and the years of non-Jewish kings change in Tishrei, in terms of what is Shnat Esrim, what is etc. Okay, that's an interesting point to discuss, but that is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, is Rosh Hashanah for kings. Rosh Chodesh Elul is a Rosh Hashanah, not connected to Tshuva, not connected to what we do during the month of Elul, properly so, but it is for Maser Behema. Now, Maser Behema, tithing of animals, is actually a mitzvah we do not do today. It only applies when there's a Beis HaMikdash. So if you've never heard of giving Maser on your animals, it's because we taka do not do it today. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if you had 10 sheep, 10 goats, you would separate one out of the 10, and you would bring it as a korban, which you would then eat. It was a type of korban that you would eat, but you'd have to bring it as a korban. It has kedusha, and this is called maser behema. And the way it worked was, you have a corral, and the animals pass through the gate one at a time, and you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then you put a red stripe on number 10, so that's your maser, and then you keep on counting. If you have 100, every 10th animal becomes maser behema. Now, the rule is the following, though. You can only combine animals if they were born the same year. If I have 5 animals from year 1 and 5 animals from another year, I don't have a unit of 10. I'm actually exempt from Maser Behema. I have to have the 10 animals the same year. Now, strangely enough, the definition of a year for animals is not Tishrei. It is Rosh Chodesh Elul, which therefore means 5 animals born before Rosh Chodesh Elul and 5 animals born after Rosh Chodesh Elul are 2 different years. They cannot be combined. Now, that actually turns out to be a leniency. Therefore, you are exempt from the mitzvah of Maser Behema. Now, why would Elul be relevant? Why not Tishrei? Tishrei is the beginning of the year. So basically, it's based on the reproductive cycle, that generally sheep and goats would tend to reproduce in late summer. Elul is around the demarcation point, and therefore that was chosen. By the way, I have to share with you, I didn't hear you, huh? Yeah, it's sheep, goats, or cattle. Sheep, goats, or cattle. So I have to share with you a vort that I heard when I was in 9th grade. I remember this, and I believe my Rebbe, Rav Hillel Sitner, I think is still alive and should be in good health. And he said the following vort to us. We were like 9th graders at Neri Saw in Baltimore. He said that this idea of Maser Behema is actually connected to the month of Elul. Because imagine you're a sheep, and the sheep sees the guy with the stick that's going to hit the sheep. So the first sheep is scared, and the second sheep is a little less scared. By the time you get to the 10th sheep, he has no pachad at all. He figures everything's great. That's when the onshim happen. Meaning, as long as you're cognizant of a midas adin in the world, Hashem will protect you. When you ignore the midas adin and you have no pachad, then it's going to hit you, right? So number 10 is complacent. Because number 10 is complacent, I heard that in 9th grade many, many years ago, but it's a good, it was a way of, you know, getting us in shape, you know, and the like. So that's Maser Behema. Now, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, of course, is the Rosh Hashanah of the creation of man, and that is the creation of judgment and everything else. But then we come to Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot. Now, let me explain what this is. We know that in Eretz Yisrael, there are many matanos. There are many things we have to separate from produce, and that applies even today. Maybe rabbinically, maybe d'oraisa, though those are different questions. But we have to separate truma, that's given to a kohen. We separate maser, which is a 10% given to a levi. Now, we also separate a second tithe that in the time of the temple would be eaten in Yerushalayim, maser sheni. We don't eat it today, but we still have to separate it. And then, depending on the year of the Shemitah cycle, because the agricultural cycle is 6 years, year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Shemitah is exempt from Truma and Maser. So Truma and Maser is 1 to 6. So every single year, you must separate Truma, which can be as little as 2%. Every single year, there is a Maser Rishon that goes to the Levi. But the second 10% depends on the year. This is a little complicated. Year 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle, you have the Maser Sheni that would be brought to Yerushalayim and eaten. Year 3 and 6, the second tithe was given to the poor, and they could eat it wherever they wanted. So 4 out of the 6 years is Maser Sheni, and 2 out of the 6 years is Maser Oni. Okay, now, obviously, therefore, it's very important to know what year a fruit, vegetable, or grain belongs. Because if it's a year 1 fruit, vegetable, grain, you would take off Truma, Maser Rishon, Maser Sheni. If it's a year 2, it would be the same thing. But if it's a year 3, it would be, you know, Truma, Maser Rishon, and Maser Ani. So you have to know. So obviously, you have to always know if it's a 2-3 or a 5-6. You need to know that because the Maser changes. But in reality, even from a 1 to 2, you have to know the year something belongs to. A farmer has to keep a record. And the reason is because, similar to Maser Behema, you cannot combine produce of different years. So, for example, let's take Truma. Truma, we'll say, is 2% that's given to a Kohen. Now, that means if I have 100 bushels, I give 2 bushels to a Kohen. Now, let's say I have 50 from 1 year and 50 from another year. I got to take the 2% off for each year. I can't, as it were, just mix them up and then separate the 2%, because you cannot give produce of 1 year on produce of another year. So as a result, it's very, very critical to know what year a crop belongs to.
Do we do this today?
Okay, so we actually...
Strawberry picking.
Yep.
And she brought back strawberries that had to take off Truma's Maaser. What do you do with those Truma's Maaser? You just sell them, right?
That's correct. They're wrapped in plastic. In other words, we basically, the way it works today is, maybe I should give a whole show on this, is that we do separate them. We do separate them, but we don't give them. And the reason we don't give them out is primarily because these things have holiness and they cannot be eaten in a state of tuma, in a state of ritual impurity. And since today we're all tamei met, because we've been in contact with the dead, and as a result we're not able to, we don't have the para aduma, the red heifer, that would purify us. So all of these matanos have to be separated, but they cannot be given anymore and consumed because of the laws of Tuma. Therefore, they're essentially wrapped in plastic and discarded. That's exactly right. But the hafrasha, the separation, is still done. And it must be done, because until you're mafrish, until you separate the trumos and the masros, the produce is forbidden to be eaten. This is called the word tevel. Tevel. Any untithed produce, fruit, vegetable, grain, of Eretz Yisrael only of Eretz Yisrael, is called tevel, and there's an isser of the Torah for anybody. Even a Kohen cannot eat tevel. It's funny. If a Kohen has his own produce, even though after he separates the truma, he can give it to himself. But until he separates the truma, he cannot eat it. There's an issur of tevel
now
in that produce.
What if you import things to America?
Yeah, so
like,
this...
You could just eat whatever you feel like, even if they didn't separate it. Well,
I'm sorry to disabuse you. No, that's a very serious problem.
So what happened when you got those Jaffa oranges, which I used to eat and ate and eat?
Well, Baruch Hashem, there's Yom Kippur. A lot of Yom Kippurs have passed by. This is a... No, I understand that. The thing about Trumas and Masros is it depends on where it grew, not where you eat. Meaning, if I brought apples from America on the trip and I'm eating them here, I do not have to take off Trumas and Masros. If I took Israeli produce from here to America, I do have to separate trumas and masros. So, I'm sorry. Huh? I didn't hear.
They don't let produce in America because they know that people are going to forget to take chumbo.
No, that's not true. That's, no, that's what?
Joke.
Oh, it's a joke. Yeah. I'm sorry.
See.
Oh. Well, okay, that's all right. Yeah, I don't want to get that. I mean, there's an issue that it may not apply to peppers. It may not apply to a number of things. But you have to be careful. Be it as it may, if you buy Israeli produce, you need to verify this. But as the point is, we have to be mafresh, but we don't give it because of the laws of Tumah. Yeah.
Is it better not to take it out anyway?
Well, there is actually a rule about Shemitah produce, that Shemitah produce should not be taken outside of Israel. That's true. But if it's regular produce during the other 6 years, it's mutter. It's mutter. Take it out. Yeah. Yeah. So, Baruch Hashem, I mean, listen, most of us, although it's not bad to know how to do it, but most of us generally do not have to separate anything. Because you buy in stores that have some type of hashgacha, right? Whether it's whatever your hashgacha is, I'm not going to get into that. But whether it's a rabbanut or whether it's eda charedes,
or
I'm going to plead the fifth. I believe the rabbanut is good for fruits and vegetables, but some people will argue with that. But I do believe it's okay. But again, I'm not here to tell you about hashgachas, but. Basically, the one thing I will tell you is that in Eretz Yisrael, you must buy, unless you want to take off Trumas and Masras, which, you know, you can do it. But if you don't know how to do it, it's very important that your fruits and vegetables be purchased and your grain products be purchased with Hashgacha. Again, whatever your Hashgacha is, I'm not here to tell you one way or the other, because the Hashgacha does assure that the Trumas and the Masras were taken off, and therefore, Orla as well, I'll get to, and therefore you don't have a problem. This is my opinion. Again, in the yeshiva world, sometimes there are different views on it, but I believe the rabbanut is fine for fruits and vegetables.
And if you have an orange tree growing in your
garden? You have a problem. You have to know this. If you're a home gardener, you must know how to take off, or get somebody to do it for you. You must know how to take off the trumas and the masras. So you don't have to do it. You can do it on each orange if you want a little bit, or you can take all your oranges and you know.
Don't all grow at the same time. So each orange,
okay. I can't describe this in 5 minutes. Maybe I'll try to do something in writing for you. But you absolutely need to know this. That's why kashrus in Israel is harder than chutz laretz. In chutz laretz, I could buy at least fruits and vegetables, generally speaking, although they sometimes have waxes that have problems. But putting aside the waxes, I can buy an apple in any grocery store, and there's no problem. In Eretz Yisrael, you already have to be conscious of trumas and masras. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, the truth is, I should have qualified this. When the farmers separate the trumas and the masras, although they throw away the truma part, the maser oni, if it's year 3 and 6, the maser oni is in fact given to the poor. Because the maser oni is not subject to the laws of purity. Therefore, even if you're tamei, right? So that is given. The reason why typically, so actually if you're a home gardener, you need to be cognizant of that. But for most of us, even when we separate trumas and masros at home, we don't do so because it's definitively tevel. We do so because maybe we don't rely on a hashgacha, so it's a suffek. Misuffek, you don't have to give it, because that's the general rule in monetary matters, that all doubts, possession is 9/10 of the law. So generally speaking, if for example, somebody doesn't rely on a certain hashgacha, and therefore separates trumas and masras again, they would not have to give the maser ani to the ani. But if you're growing your own, and you know for sure that it wasn't given, then year 3 and 6 you would. So now, the point is this, therefore. There are two things you need to know. For every fruit, I mean, I don't mean that you as a consumer, but if you're a farmer, there are two things you need to identify for every single fruit, vegetable, and grain. Number one, when does the year start? Number two, what is the event that must take place botanically to determine what year it belongs to? Now, for vegetables, again, this is going to be complicated, but hopefully it'll be clear as I go on. For vegetables, the operative event is harvesting. That is called lakita. For grain, the operative event is reaching a third of its full maturity. That only an expert would really know. For trees, it is what is called chanata. Now, chanata means budding. So if you're a horticulturalist, you know that most fruit-bearing trees produce flowers. And when the flower drops out, you have a little bud. And the bud is the start of the fruit that will grow. So the budding is the very beginning of the fruit, the very beginning of the fruit. So that means the following. If a vegetable, if a tomato, and it's tomato by tomato, if a tomato was harvested before Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, it belongs to the old year. If it was harvested after Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, it belongs to the new year. So for vegetables, our two points are this. The pu'ula that determines its year is lakita, and the definition, the date that determines the year, is Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so for yerakot, our two variables are lakita and Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Now, this actually means that a single crop that's harvested over a few weeks may have two different years for Masrot. Because everything, the tomatoes that were harvested before Rosh Hashanah are old year. Tomatoes harvested after Rosh Hashanah are new year. Right? So for vegetables, it's pretty simple. Lakita, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Now for grain, we look at Hava'at Shalish, meaning even if two-thirds of the growth and the harvesting was later, and once again, Tishrei is your date. And that is, grain that reached a third of its final maturity, the final total growth, before Tishrei, belongs to the old year. If it reached Hava'at Shalish after Tishrei, it belongs to the new year. And this is true both in terms of not being able to aggregate the produce of different years and in terms of whether it's a Maser Sheni or Maser Oni, if you're going from year two to year three. Year two is Maser Sheni, year three is Maser Oni. So if you're going from year two to year three, if it reached a Shalish before Tishrei, it's year two and it would be Maser Sheni. If it reached a Shalish after Tishrei, it's year three, and it's Maser Ani. So, both vegetables and grain, the Rosh Hashanah for Trumot and Masrot is Echad B'Tishrei, and the only difference between them is that for grain, we look at for vegetables, we look at Lakita. For grain, we look at Hava'at Shalish. Now, let's now go to fruit, things that grow on trees, oranges, apples, pears, peaches, nuts, right? Almonds, other than peanuts, nuts also grow on trees. So here, we look at chanata. Chanata is budding, but the relevant date of the new year is not Tishrei, but it's Tu Bishvat, which means any tree, not trees, it's fruit by fruit, any fruit that budded before Tu Bishvat belongs to the old year. Now that would mean the following. This year, right, this year is Tufshin Pei Dalet. If a tree or if a fruit budded today, It would not be a tough shin pei dalet fruit. It would be a tough shin pei gimel fruit. In other words, the year of the Elan does not end on Tishrei. The year of the Elan ends on Chamisha Asar Bishvat, which means Chanata after, I'm sorry, before Chamisha Asar Bishvat, even though it's a new year, will connect it back to the old year. Now, that is the significance of Chamisha Asar Bishvat as Rosh Hashanah Leilanot in terms of establishing what year a fruit belongs to. So the event that has to take place is Chanata. The tarich in which it determines what year the Chanata belongs to is going to be Chamisha Asar Bishvat. According to Beis Shammai, it was the first of Shvat. Now, the Svara for why Tu B'Shvat would be relevant for trees is because even though Tu B'Shvat is technically still in the winter, again, even in Eretz Yisrael, we're in the winter, and Chutz La'aretz, we might have snow, it's even more noticeable. So there's really no fruit. There's no fruit you see at all. Nevertheless, all of the sap that will produce the fruit has risen by Tu B'Shvat. And there's a whole muster. So Tu B'Shvat represents the hidden potential of growth that is not yet perceptible. But that's the true birthday. The birthday of the fruit is not necessarily where you see the fruit. The birthday of the fruit is when everything is ready for it to produce. And then I look at when the Chanata takes place, pre-Tu B'Shvat, which is rare actually, or post-Tu B'Shvat, and that determines the year. Yeah?
So did that go
per
tree, per fruit?
It's per fruit. It's per fruit. So that actually means that a farmer who's Shomer Mitzvot has to keep a record. You tie a string around every single thing to determine Chanata. It's a very big deal. Huh? Chanata is Chet Nun Tes Hey. Chanata. The word appears in a different verb forms in Shira Shirim, so it's described there. Okay, now, what throws a little bit of a wrench into this is Shemitah, because Tu B'Shvat is not relevant for Shemitah. Shemitah goes from Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, to the 29th of Elul, and that applies to fruits, grains, vegetables. Tu B'Shvat is not relevant regarding the laws of Shemitah. Not for Shemitah. Not for Shemitah, which means the following. Even though normally the rule is a fruit that budded before Tu B'Shvat belongs to the old year, but if the year after Shemitah a fruit budded before Tu B'Shvat, it does not belong to Shemitah. It belongs to year one. Which actually means, for trees, year one is a long year. It's an 18-month, almost an 18-month year. Because like this, the year one for trees does begin Rosh Hashanah, because it's after Shemitah. But it'll be Nimshach until Tu B'Shvat a year later. Well, the reason is because Shemitah ends when it ends. Shemitah ends. So therefore, anything that buds after Shemitah no longer belongs to Shemitah. On the other hand, this is a tree. So the tree's new year will not start until next Tu B'Shvat. Which means, I don't remember what year was Shemitah, but let's make believe, which I know is not true, right? Let's make believe that 5783 was a Shemitah year. And now it's 5784, I know it's not true, is the year after Shemitah. So here's the thing. Shemitah ends with respect to everything. Shemitah ends, Legamre, 29th of Elul. Shemitah's over. So, if a tree would have budded today, I would not treat it as a Shemitah fruit, because Shemitah's over. I treat it as a first-year fruit, for which I have to take off Trumas, Masros, Maser Bishon, and Maser Sheni. Now, how long does that year last? That year, year one, is not going to end. It's not going to end this Tu B'Shvat. It's going to end next Tu B'Shvat, the following. Which means year one, assuming Tufshin Pei Dalit, is year one. Year one will not end for trees until Tu B'Shvat of Tufshin Pei Hei. Now, the opposite phenomenon you're going to have in year six. Because year six, the year before a Shemitah, for trees does not begin until Tu B'Shvat of year six. Because if it budded before Tu B'Shvat, it belongs to year five. So, if it's year six, and it budded after Tu B'Shvat, it belongs to the new year six, Masr Ani. But year six is going to end Tishrei, because that's when Shemitah begins. So you only have half a year. Which means to say, year one for trees is 18 months, and year six for trees is around 6 months, and all the years in the middle are going to be year to year from Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat. In other words, the problem is because Shemitah wrecks the system, because since Shemitah is not affected by Tu B'Shvat, so you just have this Shemitah thing in the middle. Now, this is a particular complication only for trees because of the intersection of Shemitah and Tu B'Shvat. With respect to vegetables and grain, everything is very, very simple. The year begins and ends in a lockstep with Tishrei, and Shemitah is the same cycle, Tishrei, and therefore we just look at Lakita, Ravah, Shalish, and that's how we determine it. Again, I apologize for the complexities. I don't want to discourage people from being gardeners or whatever. It's gardening and producing is part of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Part of inhabiting Eretz Yisrael is not only physically living here. That's, of course, a mitzvah. The Ramban says that's a mitzvah. But the Ramban also says making the land more productive, making it more habitable, making it more beautiful is, in fact, part of the mitzvah of settling Eretz Yisrael. So, in fact, that's an aspect that even from Chutz La'aretz, you're Mekayim. If you plant trees or other things, there's a certain aspect of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael that you are fulfilling by beautifying the land and making it more productive. In fact, the Aljo Slobodka used to say picking up garbage was a fulfillment of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, to make it more beautiful and the like. So I don't want to discourage gardeners, but there's a lot of halachas, you know, a person needs to know in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's trees or whether it's vegetables, or if you're growing, most people aren't growing grain, I assume, or you're growing wheat or whatever it would be. There are many, many halachas that you need to know. Shemitah, of course, is a whole other parsha. We're not talking about the laws of Shemitah, but besides Shemitah, you do have Trumas and Masros that are there. Now I'm going to mention one other set of halachas that Tu B'Shvat is very relevant for, and that is the following. Trumos and Masros are obligations both on fruit, vegetables, grain. Right? They're not unique to fruit, although fruit has a unique tarikh of the 15th of Shvat, as well as Chanata as the unique botanical event. But Trumos and Masros are the same thing that you do for everything. But there is one unique halacha that only applies to fruit-bearing trees, and that is the law of Orla. The law of Orla. And the Torah says in Parshas Kedoshim that when you plant a tree, for the first 3 years of the tree, the fruit is prohibited to be eaten. This is called Orla. In fact, according to the Chazal, the fruit is supposed to be burnt. Lamaisa, that is not the minhag today. Orla fruit is not burnt, it's just thrown away, and the Achronim have a lot of pilpul exactly. Why is it our minhag not to burn Orla, since the Gemara says specifically Orla is supposed to be burnt, but whether you throw it away or burn it, it is absolutely prohibited to be eaten. Now, I want to just dispel a misconception some people have. I'm sure that none of you have this misconception, but just in case. Some people think Orla means I can't eat the fruit for 3 years and after 3 years I could. No, the fruit of the first 3 years is prohibited forever. It doesn't become permitted after 3 years. And this too depends on chanata, meaning any fruit that budded within the 3 year of the orla period, even if most of its growth took place after the orla period, that is orla forever and ever and cannot be eaten, right? Any chanata. Now, once again, if you are if you have your own trees, you have to be aware of this. If you buy fruit that is under rabbinic supervision, so one of the things that are supervised by the rabbanut or any hashgacha, says naki, right? It'll say naki michashash orla. Again, I'm not here to tell you what hashgachas to trust or not, but any hashgacha on fruits or vegetables will certify that it's not orla, because if it's orla, how could they sell it to you? I mean, you're not allowed to eat it. Yeah.
So this is also from year to year.
So now I want to talk about this. Now, first of all, one issue about orla that's extremely important, which I'm not going to fully address, is the orla clock can often get reset when you replant. So, for example, you buy a tree from a nursery and you plant it on your ground. Well, even if the tree, you know, is already 5 years old or 10 years old, by replanting it, you start again, and you need 3 years from the replanting. Now, this is very complicated, because very often, if there's a significant amount of clumps of dirt, right, when you buy a nursery tree, usually there's like a big ball of soil that's connected to the roots, so then you're able to tack on the pre-existing time, and if it's already beyond orla, you're okay. But if you simply have it without the dirt, then it's called a new planting, and the orla clock gets reset. So anytime you are replanting a tree, you need to be sure that there's enough soil that could sustain the tree, otherwise you'd be starting the orla clock over again. Now, 3 years. So the orla period is 3 years. What does that mean? Is that 3 years from the planting date? No. So here too, halacha is very, very complicated. The halacha says that the tree gets the benefit of a year if essentially, okay, here's Chazal's assumption. Chazal's normal operating assumption is that when you plant either a tree or a seed, for that matter, it takes 2 weeks until it gets firmly rooted into the ground. Right? So kalita takes 14 days. And then, in order for a year to count for orla, it has to be planted in the ground securely for at least 30 days. In other words, if it was rooted in the ground for 30 days, that counts as year one. Therefore, you finished year one. Well, starts year. Well, in other words, like this. This is actually
14 days plus 30 days.
Yes, it is. It's 44 days. Yeah, it's 14. Wow. Right. In other words, meaning this is actually one of the halachic importance of the 15th of Av. 15th of Av is 44 days before Rosh Hashanah. If you plant a tree or a seed of a tree. Most people don't plant seeds of trees. It takes years and years. But if you plant a tree, a sapling, 44 days before Rosh Hashanah, then when Rosh Hashanah comes, you have finished year one.
Not Tu Bishvat.
I'll get to it. Right. When Rosh Hashanah comes, you finished year one. Year two is Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. Year three is Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. But then, because now it's a tree, not just a sapling, you have to wait till Tu Bishvat. So again, let's take a concrete example. Let's imagine I planted a tree the 15th of Av, let's say later in the summer, the 15th of Av, not too much, the 15th of Av, 5784. Okay? 15th of Av, 5784. When Rosh Hashanah of 5785 comes, I have finished year one. When Rosh Hashanah of 5786 comes, I have finished year two. When Rosh Hashanah of 5787 comes, I have finished 3 years of Orla, although it's only, the actual amount of time is only 2 years and 44 days. Now, and that means any fruit that was nechanat, that budded, within that period of time is Orla. But then the Gemara says, this is the second aspect of Tu Bishvat, that the law of Orla will extend until Tu Bishvat of 5787. Because when you planted it, it was called a sapling. It was not called an ilan. But after 3 years, when it's able to produce edible fruit, it graduates into ilan, and the Rosh Hashanah of Ilanot is Tu Bishvat, which means, therefore, if I plant something on the 15th of Av, 5784, the peros are orla until Tu Bishvat of 5787. Okay, I hope you're following this. And because essentially, year one is a 44-day year. Year two and three are complete years, but when you finish year three, you have to extend the year till the Tu Bishvat.
The 3 year is always like an 18-month
year. Yep, that's correct. That's the last one. Now, this is only true, and I'll make sense. This is only true when you started with a short year. Now, let's imagine, what is the halacha if I planted something after the 15th of Av? I planted something, let's say, Elul of 5784. Under those circumstances, because I didn't have my 44 days, that doesn't count at all. So therefore, I need 3 full years. I need all of 5785. I need all of 5786. I need all of 5787. The law of Orla doesn't stop until 5788. But then I don't have to wait to Tu Bishvat, because the rule that you have to wait to Tu Bishvat is only if you haven't had 3 full years. Meaning, if you're taking advantage of a short year, Chazal were Koveya, you need to extend your last year to Tu Bishvat. But when you have 3 full years, because you planted less than 44 days in the old year, so you need 3 full years, you never, even for an Ilan, you do not have to go to Tu Bishvat for Orla. Right, so this is, again, a fascinating, complicated issue. In fact, you have a similar question. If I planted, let's say I planted today before Tu Bishvat. If I count 3 years from the planting, that'll be before the last Tu Bishvat. Some say I don't have to wait to Tu Bishvat there either, because as long as I have 3 full years. In other words, the requirement of Tu Bishvat is when you don't have 3 full years, so we tag on a Tu Bishvat. When you have 3 full years, and that'll be under two circumstances. One is where I planted less than 44 days before Rosh Hashanah. The other is if I plant before Tu Bishvat. When I count my 3 full years, that'll be over before Tu Bishvat. So then you wouldn't have to wait. In other words, the klal is, whenever you have 3 full years, you don't have to extend it to Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat is primarily a necessary extension when you are taking advantage of the shortened year of the 44 days, right? So this is the second aspect of Rosh Hashanah Lilanot. One is for Trumas and Masros, and the other is the extension of the laws of Orla when you have a short year because, I'm sorry, when you don't, yeah, when you have a short year because you planted 44 days before the end of the year.
Do you think
yeah.
the one that you planted before
Tu
B'Shvat?
Yeah.
Don't you go to a
Tu B'Shvat? No, no, here's the thing. Let's assume you planted today. So today is the, what, 13th? This is the 13th of Shvat of 5784. So, if I count 3 years from that, that gives me 13th of Shvat, 5785, 13th of Shvat, 5786, and then 13th of 5787. So, 3 full years are up the 13th of Shvat, 5787. So since you've completed 3 full years before Tu B'Shvat, you don't have to wait to Tu B'Shvat, right? So the two scenarios where you don't have to wait to Tu B'Shvat is you planted within 44 days of the end of the year, or you planted before Tu B'Shvat. Now, by contrast, when you plant after Tu B'Shvat, right? But before the 15th of Av, that's when you get the benefit of that short year, and therefore the last, well, you have to wait till Tu B'Shvat. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good question. The question is, what is the general idea of Orla? Why does the Torah say that for the first 3 years you are not supposed to eat the fruits, and indeed even destroy it? In the most general way, a lot of these laws simply show that the land belongs to Hashem and you need Hashem's special permission, and you cannot simply assert your shalita over it, and that's part of it. And by the way, the minhag of upsharing, the minhag of not giving a haircut until the child is 3 years old, which really was not an Ashkenazic custom so much, but now everybody takes it from Hasidim and Sephardim. But it is from the Arizal. The Arizal brings such a minhag, and he bases it on Orla, that just like the fruit is not ready to be eaten until it's 3 years, the baby is not ready to be trained and guided and educated until he reaches 3. And therefore, the upsharing, the cutting of the hair, was traditionally also the day that the child gets inaugurated in the study of Torah. Right? So they combine the upsharing with letters. They put honey on, you know, different customs. They put honey on the letters. In some kehilos, the child was brought to cheder wrapped in a talis. But the analogy is to Orla, that the child before 3 is like wild, uncontrollable growth of hair, therefore not suitable for directed chinuch and the like. But as I say, that's kind of, once we have Orla, we extrapolate it to other situations, but I don't know if that explains why there was a concept of Orla to begin with. Yeah, there actually is no difference. Even trees that are in containers do have the law of Orla. Now, it happens to be the case that a lot of trees may not really produce that much edible fruit within a few years anyway. That the truth of the matter is. So it's like substandard stuff for a while. It takes a while for the tree to get its act together. But nevertheless, so Orla does apply to potted trees. As well. Now, as I say, most of the time, though, when you buy a sapling from a nursery, the sapling itself is usually beyond the Orla period, but you got to be careful that there's dirt attached to the roots. That's the thing. In other words, as long as there's a lot of a ball of dirt attached to the roots, usually you will not have an Orla problem because the tree is already beyond the Orla stage by the time you buy it. Now, if in the rare situation, like Johnny Appleseed, you actually plant, I don't know anyone that even does this, but if you plant a tree from seed, then of course you're going to have all of the Orla rules. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, okay. Yes.
Okay,
I'm sorry, you didn't want to say? Yeah, in the back. Yeah, so here's the thing. Orla is not only usher to eat, it is usher to get benefit from, like chametz. And anything that's usher to get benefit from, you cannot even feed to your animals. Now, you can leave it in the street, so if hefker animals eat it, that's not your responsibility, but you cannot get the benefit of feeding your own animals, Orla. Yeah, so there is something in the fourth year as well. The fourth year is called Revai, the fourth year, and that becomes like a Master Sheni. All of the fruits of year number four are supposed to be taken to Yerushalayim and eaten or redeemed. So that's an issue as well. Today we redeem it on a coin, which we store, and we then eat it regularly, wherever you want to eat it. But you have to be po de the Revai too. And there too, the year of Revai will go until Tu B'Shvat. And it's based on, again, everything is based on budding. Chanata. So, yeah. Okay, so as I say, well, I'm giving one message on Wednesday night. The Tu B'Shvat Seder is not a halacha, but once again, it started as a custom of the Mekubalim in Svat, the Arizal, and the Arizal's Talmidim. And basically, the idea was it is a celebration of the brachos of fertility that Hashem has given to Eretz Yisrael, a recognition of the hidden potential of the sap that's not yet visible, and a recognition that a human being is also compared to a tree. And therefore, it's a time of spiritual growth, a time of hakaras hatov. There is in the Tu B'Shvat Seder four cups of wine, similar to the Pesach Seder, and the cups move from pure white to a little bit of red mixed with white to half and half to pure red, and that represents either the change of seasons from winter to fall, or it represents Midas Hadin and Midas Harachmim. There are different configurations of that. And the amount of fruits that one eats depends on the different minhagim. Some have the seven minim, the seven species. Others have 12 different types of fruits. Keneged, the 12 combinations of yudke vavke that can be arranged 12 different ways. So different spiritual influences are brought into the world. And some have 30 types of fruits and vegetables. Well, 15, but some have 30. Yeah, but some do have 30. Huh? And the idea of 30 is based on the different worlds. It's very deeply Kabbalistic. But I would say that the minimum standard, one should endeavor to have the seven minim. And preferably, I'm not in charge of the menu, because I don't even know exactly. But we don't have 30. I think we typically have... four cups of wine, sure, absolutely. No, four cups of wine for sure we have. That's a standard. Every Tu B'Shvat Seder has four cups of wine, but the number of minim will vary. And what there are good books in English and in Hebrew that give different mamare chazal from the Medrash and from the Zohar about the qualities of each of these fruits, what they represent, and the like. So before you eat the date, the 15 Shir HaMalos says, okay, yeah. It's interesting. You could do that, but normally that's not in the Tu B'Shvat Seder per se. It's more of a gratitude for the fertility, and each fruit represents a certain spiritual essence. We'll stop here anyway. Have a happy Tu B'Shvat. And